This is Shades of Green Energy, Austin's live green talk radio show with your hosts, John Hoffner, Deborah Dubay, and Reed Sternberg.
We're live on 91.7 FM KOOP Hornsby, Austin, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. and streaming live online at KOOP.org.
Get program information and download past shows at shadesofgreenenergy.org.
The views expressed here are not necessarily the views of KOOP Radio, its board of directors, volunteers, staff, or underwriters.
So we have an interesting show today. We're going to be talking about water. And we have Chris Maxwell Gaines from Innovative Water Solutions here in the studio with us. And Roland Ruiz from the Edwards Aquifer Authority. So what other better topic to talk about but rain or lack of rain and how dry it is. And I'm real interested in, and maybe Chris can illuminate us or let us know how full some of those tanks are with the lack of water. I know I had a friend a while ago that during one of our debate, our real bad droughts, was laughing at us because he was out there taking showers and had plenty of water in his tank. So if you design it right, you can have quite a bit of water. So we'll get to that in our show. And then we'll do a little medley that I put together on, I'll call it a rain dance, on trying to get some rain here into the central Texas area, all of Texas, and maybe we can even get it to rain here in the studio.
Give me some diamonds.
Diamonds of rain. Man, it's raining in here, you guys.
This is our rain dance.
Aren't you jealous out there?
Yeah, we got the only rain in Texas right here in the studio. All right. So that was our little medley about rain. So let's get to our guest, Deborah. We've got, we hope, on the phone, Roland Ruiz. Roland, are you there with us?
I am here and glad to be here with you.
Great. Okay. So we've got Roland Ruiz from the Edwards Aquifer Authority on the phone and Chris Maxwell Gaines from Innovative Water Solutions. And Deborah, you're going to cue us up with the questions.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Roland, thank you for joining us. Roland Ruiz is with the Edwards Aquifer Authority. Roland, would you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do at the Edwards Aquifer Authority?
Well, the authority is a regional regulatory body. We were created by the Texas Legislature really to manage, protect, and to take care of one of this region's most precious natural resources, that being the Edwards Aquifer. About 2 million people depend on this aquifer for their water, for their everyday uses, from domestic use around the house, for washing, cleaning, consuming, to industry and beyond. And, of course, a large component of that is the agricultural economy and the raising of crops, food shows up on our tables every day. So it's a big task and one that can be wrought with pitfalls here and there, but as a regulatory agency, we've been around since 1996, and right now we're in the midst of this drought, and we're doing our best to manage the resource in a time that it's really under stress because there's just not been any rainfall for so long.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a couple other questions, but I also wanted to ask you, what is it that led to your interest in water and water management?
From a personal standpoint.
From a personal standpoint, well, you know, the Edwards Aquifer Authority is I've been here 5 years now with the agency, and what drew me to the agency more than anything was really the component of public service that an agency like this serves. And I'd worked before in educational environments, community college and such, and as I contemplated my future, I wanted to find a place where I could continue to have some impact, not only today, but for the long term. And I think that when you work in a place where you're kind of given responsibility for the stewardship of something that's going to impact not just the present generation, but generations to come, it can be very rewarding. You leave your imprint, if you will, in a very positive way for the long term.
Yeah,
outstanding. Outstanding. You know, when I think of the Edwards Aquifer, sometimes for myself it's hard to get an idea of just how far and how big it is. And maybe if you could, for our listeners, describe how many counties it is that are impacted by the value of the water provided by the Edwards Aquifer, and how many square miles that is.
Sure. We cover, and again, the Edwards Aquifer as an underground resource spans a large swath across South Central Texas. We're responsible for managing and protecting a swath from Uvalde County across Medina County to Bexar County, all the way up to Comal and Guadalupe County, and then to Hays County. Now our regulatory authority ends at the Hays County line, and once you get into Travis County, the Barton Springs Edwards Aquifer Conservation District takes over. So the resource itself really cuts a good long path across the that area. I want to say, just from memory, I believe that's about 180 miles that we're responsible for. And as I mentioned previously, within that jurisdictional area, there are approximately 2 million people. And for those 2 million people, the Edwards is the primary water resource. I say primary, it's almost the only water resource. There are some municipalities across the region that have diversified their water resource and aren't solely dependent on the aquifer, and that's a good thing. There are some surface water from Canyon Lake and for example, that I know the city of New Braunfels and the city of San Marcos also rely on some surface water. So across the region, that's one of the things we're trying to encourage, and that's diversification of water resources such that we're not solely dependent on this one resource.
Yeah, Roland, I've got the act here, at least part of it in front of me, and it was the Edwards Aquifer Authority Act, and that was, I guess, passed in 1993, and then you guys were formed in 1996. Is that how it worked?
Correct. The act was passed in 1993, mm-hmm. and in implementing the act, there were some legal challenges that arose. It mainly had to do with a board of directors and how it was originally set up in the act and voting rights issues. That all got sorted out, and then in June of 96, the authority actually came into being, and it supplanted the former Edwards Underground Water District that was in place and had been in place for many, many years. So that really was a landmark occasion in time. It may not have appeared to be so at the time, but when you look back at what has happened since, we now have a very sound regulatory framework in place that I believe over time has proven to be quite effective in managing the water that's withdrawn, such that we're able to endure a drought such as the one we're in currently in. And although the aquifer still feels the effects, I think the reality is that, you know, we've been without any significant rainfall since last October, and the aquifer levels have declined significantly, but they've been stabilized to a large degree. And here we are in the middle of summer when demand is at its peak, and we're seeing that we're able to sustain those levels at a relatively healthy level. And spring flow that emanates from the aquifer has continued to flow, and that's really the primary concern and the impetus behind the Edwards Aquifer Authority Act was taking measures that would be protective of species and species habitats that are supported by the aquifer in the form of springs that have sustained those species since who knows when, but who nonetheless have been protected by the federal government under the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah. Well, this may be a little bit beyond my understanding of dates and legislature, but part of the, and I don't know if it was part of that act, but wasn't there a major change in the way we looked at aquifers and underground water that gave, maybe gave your organization some of the authority, but that we don't look at underground aquifers, and in particular Edwards, as a only underwater, it's more regulated now, but like surface water.
Well, yes and no. You are correct that the Edwards itself is unique within the state of Texas in how it's regulated. And back prior to the Edwards Act, there was debate as to how that should be. Is it an underground river, so to speak? And that was one of the arguments made back then. And of course, rivers and surface streams are regulated, and really that water is owned by the state of Texas. The Edwards, as it turns out, the policies that govern it are kind of a hybrid in Texas water law. What the Act did that was really instrumental in changing everything about how we take care of this aquifer was that it called for an actual cap on how much water could be withdrawn from the aquifer on an annual basis. And with that cap, it established the parameters for implementing a permitting system whereby people would get their allocation of water, but it would be allocated based on historic use. And so we as an agency went through that process of having entities come through here. They had to apply for their water, and some got denied and others didn't. And as you might imagine, that was a challenging time to go through. But in the end, it really changed the face of water, groundwater management in this area. And even now, if you look across the state with other aquifers and groundwater districts, they don't quite look like the Edwards Aquifer in the way that they're managed and protected. They are not as managed or protected as this aquifer. And as you take a look at how things are changing across the state, I think you see a move afoot to perhaps bring greater responsibility and management to those aquifers as water becomes more and more scarce in light of growing population, droughts, climate change and such. I think the state is waking up to the realization that we have to do something differently than we've done in the past.
Mm.
You know, I'd like to throw in a little piece of news that has come on across my desk in the last couple of days. I got it actually from the Abilene Reporter. It's an article about Colorado City and Mitchell County. They are suffering from a drought, and they are getting $2.8 million to use wind power to desalinate brackish groundwater and make it drinkable. And this news was provided by the Texas Department of Rural Affairs, and they announced the grant. Also, the Abilene Reporter News article said that Colorado City, their needs for water is approaching the critical stage, and without a solution like the plant that will be doing the desalination using this wind power, the city would have run out of water in 3 to 5 years. That's a very short horizon. I was very surprised to see that, and I knew that there was work being done and research being done for how to utilize wind to power desalination and reduce the cost of desalinization, but I had no idea that it was so on such a short timeline. So I was very pleased to see that Mitchell County is going to receive relief, and it just goes to show what you are saying about the value of regulating aquifers is very important.
Yeah. And that's great, and it's good that they're innovating. We need to innovate and figure out ways to stretch our water And unfortunately for our kids, I think water is going to be one of the most important issues besides energy in the future that may end up being some pretty big battles. Of course, in history, water battles were always fairly significant over borders and who owns the water. Roland, I guess one last question in your area, and then we're going to have our next guest in, but we'll have an interaction discussion as well. So your regulating authority is to offer permits for people that want to use water out of the aquifer. Is that the prime function of your regulation?
That is the overriding, the foundational purpose in our existence is to manage and limit, how much water is used. Mm-hmm. Along with that, though, there is another important component, and that is not just the quantity of water, but the quality of water. So part of our mission is also to ensure that the water that's there remains clean and usable, consumable for humans and animals alike. And so it's a pretty comprehensive mission and a big undertaking. We spent most of the first 10 years of our existence dealing with the permitting issue and getting that in place. As you might imagine, there were all sorts of legal challenges along the way that we had to overcome, and there's still a couple out there that are yet to be settled. But as we've moved past that, we're now looking more towards the water quality aspect of the mission and what we can do to further ensure that the water that is in the aquifer or enters the aquifer is of a quality that doesn't degrade the water such that it compromises the entire aquifer as a resource for us.
Yeah. Well, this is a question and maybe leads into our next guest. But outside of the aquifer, doesn't Texas law in certain areas just say that if you live somewhere, you put a house in, you can drill a well and then suck as much water out of it as you want?
You're correct. What you're referencing there is what's a common law practice or doctrine, if you will, that's commonly referred to as the rule of capture.
Yeah.
And that's what's been in place in Texas since the early 1900s. And what it is, it's really a protection it protects landowners of any liability in the event that they drill a well and pump water out of that well, and if they cause any harm to their neighbor's ability to access that same water resource, they're held free of any liability. And so it was certainly, that's certainly been a practice that's been in favor of the person with the biggest well, biggest pump.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes how that law is interpreted, as the rule of the biggest pump or the biggest straw, if you will,
yes.
gets all the water.
Always the way in Texas, the biggest. If you can suck down as much as you want and can, you can, regardless of your neighbors. And so
that's why everything's big in Texas. The guys that don't have it big, they just die.
They die, get thirsty. Well, I guess that gets us to our next guest, which is Chris Maxwell Gaines, who's going to talk about how you can get as much water as you want off of your roof, and nobody may care. So, Deborah, maybe you'll introduce our in-studio guest of Chris Maxwell Gaines.
Well, sure. We have Chris Maxwell Gaines here in the studio. He is with Innovative Water Solutions, and they design, install sustainable water conservation systems, rainwater collection, water harvesting, gray water use, sprinkler and irrigation systems, and more. And I hope he'll tell us all about this, and he has a very interesting story about how he got started doing this. So we'd like to get a little story into the background of how you originally became interested in water.
Sure. Well, thanks, Deborah. Thank you for allowing me to come on the show today. And I feel kind of strange, I guess, because we're going from a very large regional view and outlook of the issue of water and kind of bringing it down to a personal basis, but really in the end that makes it more palatable for people so that they can understand what they need to do on a day-to-day basis. And so you explained it right. I mean, we as a company, we started pretty much doing installations of rainwater collection systems, small scale and urban type systems, and we slowly grew into larger systems, meaning systems for people in the hill country who are developing a piece of land and do not want to drill a well, but they want to collect, they need water. And so the only two ways is basically drilling a well or collecting rainwater off your roof. And so we got into those systems, and then slowly it grew into other conservation technologies such as gray water reuse systems. And then over the past couple of years, we've added efficient irrigation systems. And also we're kind of getting into a re-landscaping mindset, so that because when you think about this, you can collect all the water you can, and you can try, and during a drought, it may be kind of difficult. And if you have a tropical landscape that needs a lot of water, well, something's not working out. And so we really view it as there's a, ways that we need to conserve water and change the way that we use water. And once you do that, then you can maybe bring in the thought of using this alternative water supply. And so that's the kind of the whole thought process at Innovative Water Solutions. We want to provide a whole turnkey solution for people.
Yeah.
I want to bring you back. I'm going to kind of shift this backward just slightly, because I know that you've got an interesting background, because I did some diving into your website, and I saw that before you were in business, you also were doing some things on a worldwide scale. So I'd like to hear about just a little snippet about how that impacted you, what you were doing, and how that relates to what you're doing today.
Certainly. Well, I graduated Texas A&M University with a degree in civil engineering, and the thought was I didn't want to just dive right into the consulting engineering world. And so my wife and I, we joined the Peace Corps, and we got stationed in Suriname, South America, which is on the northern coast. It's a Dutch-speaking country in South America. If I mean, hopefully people know about it, but a lot of times when we mention it, people would think it would be in Southeast Asia or something. But we got stationed there, and we were put into a village that was very, very far off the beaten path. The only way to get to our village was a canoe ride, basically a two-day canoe ride, or a one-hour little Cessna plane ride, landing on a grass strip. And so our basic role there was to basically rural community development, which for that village, they were particularly wanting a sustainable water source, because currently all they were doing was bringing water up from the river, and or catching a little rain in some old barrels, steel barrels that they had. And so we worked with them to develop a water well. And so ultimately the water well went in. It was a great project. It happened after I left, which is even better because the village did it on their own. They learned all the lessons that we were trying to teach them. But basically that's where my business partner and I, we met. And so coming from a background of civil engineering, mass scale, centralized water treatment, distribution, to living in a village where we had a 200-gallon rainwater collection tank, and that was our only water supply, drinking water supply, and looking at it on a house-to-house basis, it really changed my perspective. And so when we came back here to the United States, we just said, why can't we do something differently with our water supply? And so that kind of spawned this business, and we've slowly grown it from a backyard business to what it is now. And we've installed over, I think it's 2.2 million gallons of rainwater storage across the state of Texas. And about 750,000 of that has been in commercial projects. So you can see a brunt of it's been in residential projects.
Yeah, your tanks look nice too. On the website, you can see some fairly nice tanks. So.
Yeah, and that's the thing is with rainwater, we feel like the rainwater system is our calling card, is our business card. And if we're putting products out there that don't look good, other people are going to look at it and say, yeah, I like the concept of rainwater harvesting. It can save water for me, but I don't want this big green or big black plastic tank in the backyard.
And then you're going to deal with the same problem that people trying to put panels on their roof are getting.
That's right. Homeowners associations, and you just got all that stuff. Yeah. So
yeah, and actually that's one of the things I wanted to ask you is, I don't know if this has been resolved or changed in the city of Austin. If you're in the city limits, the way I remember it, you had, in order to get a permit, you had to hook up to the electric and water system. And is that still the case? Can you go in and say, I want all my water to be rainwater, I don't want to hook up to the city system?
Currently, no. You still have to hook up. There was a bill that was just passed in the last legislature that had language that essentially tried to maybe in the future take liability off of municipalities if a homeowner chose to use rainwater collection for indoor use, for potable use. And so basically it's spelling out a method so that if the homeowner follows all of the backflow prevention rules that the city lays out, then essentially the city has done what they've could, and now they have no liability if, say, someone in the home gets sick from drinking water that, yes, they set up a disinfection system, but what maybe if it wasn't working correctly. So it spelled out some language like that, but with all these types of bills, it takes a long time for them to trickle down and actually come into practice. So I think it's going to be really some time off, and really it's going to take cities probably to step up and actually say, yes, this is feasible, versus just going, this law says that we can do this, so it's mm-hmm. it's going to take some time. But right now you have to connect, and rainwater can only be used for outdoor use or possibly indoor non-potable use, essentially
showers.
Not even a
shower,
your toilet flushing and possibly your laundry machine is non-potable.
Wow. But outside the city, you can outside limits.
Free reign.
Yeah. And so, no pun intended
right?
That's right. Very good one.
That.
So, and you can use it for whatever you want and not have to hook up to the city. Do you have many clients that do that are all rainwater and do not have any kind of city water or even a well?
So, probably about 60% of our residential systems have been out in the hill country, and so their homes are sole source rainwater. They do not have a backup system. Over the years, because of the droughts that we've been having over the past few years, there have been a lot of interest in people who do have wells wanting to install a rainwater system as a hybrid. So they, again, what Roland was talking about with the cities diversifying their water sources, that's essentially what people are getting more interested in, is having a well, but then when they install the rainwater system, the water quality of the rainwater versus some of the well water is so much better. A lot of times people end up going using the rainwater system solely and then maybe using their well just for irrigation purposes.
Wow.
I want to throw in just for a moment that as we've been talking about cities, the city of Austin is encouraging rainwater harvesting by relaunching its rainwater harvesting rebate program for water catchment and water conservation. And also, the state of Texas encourages rainwater harvesting with tax exemptions.
Yeah.
That can be explained. I don't know exactly what the tax exemptions are on, but they exist out there. So I want listeners to be aware that there are several options to, if they're interested in water catchment, there are ways to go about it that are encouraging them to move forward.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we do need to take a break.
Okay.
You are listening to Shades of Green Energy here on your only community radio station of Shades of KOOP, KOOP.org on the web, and 91.7 here on your FM dial. We're listening to our discussion with Chris Maxwell Gaines from Innovative Water Solutions and Roland Ruiz from the Edwards Aquifer Authority. So you're back here with Shades of Green Energy, and we're glad you're with us. We're talking with Chris Maxwell Gaines from Innovative Water Solutions and Roland Ruiz from the Edwards Aquifer. And I wanted to maybe try to see if there is if you guys have conflicting goals here. The Edwards Aquifer, Roland, has to be regenerated. And when you use a water catchment and you take it off the roof, let's just take it to the extreme, and everybody in Austin and all through Central Texas had a water catchment plant, would the aquifer be in trouble?
I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because the way the aquifer replenishes itself, there's a segment, a geologic segment of the aquifer where water enters from the surface. It's on the recharge zone, and that it's generally on that area where you see water infiltrating once you get into the artesian zone where the aquifer is confined between layers of impermeable clay or rock, water at the surface is not likely to make its way into the aquifer. So that's one reason. But the other is, I think that you have to weigh the benefit of what you gain in terms of water conservation with these systems and weigh that in the overall equation. But it's interesting that you asked that, because we recently got that question from a reporter locally who was working on a story about that very issue. And as we talked about it and discussed it, we really couldn't come up with a reason why that would have a significant impact on recharge to the aquifer. There's also the consideration that if you're catching water on your rooftop and it's not leaving the property, it may have, albeit a small, but nevertheless a benefit to water quality, because that means that water is not leaving your rooftop and making its way off the property eventually into the aquifer. And so there's also that concern that water that leaves property, developed property, over the recharge zone carries with it whatever it encounters along the way, be it good, bad, or whatnot, and eventually it'll make its way into the aquifer. So that's a long way of saying that I don't think that there would be a significant adverse impact to replenishing the aquifer.
All right. Well, we'll give our other guests the opportunity to respond. Yeah.
Well, I totally agree, and I think if you look at it in terms of a total, I guess, impervious cover across a city, rooftops are really a small portion of the area where the rain is falling. And so if you look at that, you know, there's, even if, say, there was a way to collect every single drop of water from all of the rooftops, there's still plenty of our streets, our parks, the space in between our homes where water's falling on the ground and not being collected. And for years, I've been wanting to start do a website called pausethecycle.com. I'm, I guess, maybe giving some people some ideas. But basically, to teach the thought that rainwater collection, you're essentially, you know, the water cycle, you're essentially pausing the cycle. You're kind of detaining the water at your house so that then you can, you know, if you use it for irrigation, well, it's going to eventually be sprayed back out onto your grass, and it's going to, you know, not necessarily go into the aquifer. It's going to be, majority of it's going to be evapotranspirated out of the plants, but you're you know, just not allowing that water, like Roland said, just to pick up all the sediment. And during these flash flood events, that's when we get all of this stuff kind of coming off of our roofs and
parking lots
and going into our rivers and all that stormwater regulations that are needed now because of these high impervious cover areas. So rainwater collection or stormwater detention is a really good tool to maybe help with you know, this thought of these kind of flash flood events that is becoming more and more common, maybe due to climate change or something.
Yeah, well, maybe then you can comment on this. I could have it wrong, but I believe it was the city of Denver at one point had an ordinance that said you could not put a rainwater catchment on your roof because they said it's their water. It's the city owned that water, and you're taking our water.
It's the state of Colorado.
Is it the state?
The whole state.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was basically because of their water laws. Is a riparian water law system, which basically you have senior water rights and I guess minor water rights. I don't know what the other is called. And so their thought is that if you're holding water upstream, you're not allowing all that water that is should be getting down to that senior water right holder who could be downstream. And so that was a thought. There's some laws that have gone through, and I think they will allow very small-scale rain barrels and that type of stuff now. But there's also a large development called Sterling Ranch right outside of Denver that is being developed as a rainwater collection community. And so now they've launched this study to look at actually how much water, when it falls on the land, actually makes it to the river or the aquifer. Which is kind of strange because there's tons of these studies already out there, but I guess they got to do their own thing and to prove it to themselves. But it's just strange how water laws, and it's different for almost every state, really impacts how people use water and think about it, I guess.
Yeah, and we have some of the most antiquated water laws that go back 50, 100 years ago. We had a water show a couple of weeks ago and talked about all the the water that the rice farmers get in South Texas. That's just an old, massive contract. And then also we did some work with Tucson, the city of Tucson, and how crazy it is that they pump water up over the mountains and from the
Colorado,
from California, and then put it back down in the ground to store it. And it's only because they have a take or pay contract. If they don't take it, they lose it. But what I wanted to ask you is, somebody is interested in doing a rainwater system on their house. How do they get started? How do they get in contact with you? And what's their first step?
So basically, we've laid our website out so that people can come there and really teach themselves, because we feel like our best clients are people who come into the idea and are educated, because a lot of times people don't understand the sheer volume of what it takes to water their landscaping. And so when you try to tell people how big of a tank they need to have and what's the cost of that, sometimes they're really blown away because they've not educated themselves. So basically our website, which is watercache.com or watercache.com, however you want to say that, it spells out a lot of, in education-wise, what you need to think about. It provides you a way so you can calculate the amount of water that could be coming off of your home by just simply a little calculator we have for inputting your square footage. But basically, they can start there, or they can just, you know, give us a call, and we're more than happy to come out and do an assessment and see what we can do for them. And like I said before, this is really a part of a larger plan. You know, and we want people to think about that and not just, hey, look, I have a rainwater system. Now I can do whatever I want in terms of water because I'm saving water. It's something that's going to take a lot more than rainwater, because as we see with this drought, you could go many, many months without with your tank being dry. And
yeah,
you're still needing to water your landscaping to keep it alive.
Right. Just maybe you could give that rule of thumb that, how many inches of water per hundred square feet that you get in gallons?
The easy way to think about it is basically 1 inch of water over 1,000 square feet equals 623 gallons. So just if you know, do it simply on a 1,000 square foot house, you know, in an average year we get about 30 inches of rain here. You're going to collect, if you have the storage capacity and everything to do this, you're going to collect on average 18,000 gallons of water off of a 1,000-square-foot roof. Most homes nowadays are upwards of 2,000 to 3,000 in the urban environment. So,
large houses, yeah.
So, you know, you're talking 30 to 40,000 gallons of water coming off the roof. But that's if you can catch every drop. And there's going to be times when your tank is already full and it's going to overflow, so you're not going to be able to capture everything. And this is what goes into designing and appropriating the system correctly for your needs.
Mm-hmm. So are your clients out in the country calling you and saying, I've got water or I don't have water?
There are people who are running out of water, yeah, and they're getting water delivered. But there are people who, like a couple of days ago when we had that kind of freak rain event that kind of came through the hill country, something like that, if they were low, and collecting off of a home out in the hill country, they could collect a good many thousand gallons, you know, thousands of gallons of water from that short, quick burst of rain, which can then get them maybe through another month. So that's the great thing about rainwater harvesting versus relying on a well, because these little rain events that do come along, you can collect that water, whereas probably a very small percentage of that water is actually going to make a dent in terms of the water table and picking the life up back on your well. So that's the, again, I'm biased, you know, towards rainwater collection, but, you know, it is a good strategy for people, and it's, but it's just one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. It's great that I would define that as a renewable resource because it regenerates itself quickly.
That's good. That's
our definition of it. And we'll ask Roland in a minute about how long it takes to recharge the aquifer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was curious from that rainfall that we had just the other day, how it impacts the aquifer. And what I wanted to actually really draw people's attention to is a very interesting aquifer conditions report that is on your website, Roland. I feel that you have information about Comal Springs and San Marcos Springs and the aquifer in Bexar County and Uvalde. And I think it's, is it updated every 15 minutes or is it every hour?
Well, we do. There's a component that is a live look at the levels, the water table level, as it records in one of our primary index well, the one here in San Antonio, and that is updated every 15 minutes. And we don't do that with every measurement gauge across the region. It just is not possible to do that. But
sure.
The levels across the region are updated daily. And so what you see when you go there is the very latest information that we have available to us. It's really, if you follow those levels, it becomes a great education tool to familiarize yourself with how this particular aquifer works and responds to rain events, how it responds to droughts. And you mentioned this recent rain that we got that was somewhat spotty, but nonetheless, any rainfall does help. And even when that rain does not necessarily result in a lot of recharge to the aquifer, what we see is that it has a benefit in that it suppresses demand on the aquifer. We're creatures of habit, what we've seen is even the threat of rain or the forecast of rain sometimes results in a little bit of a change in aquifer level because people will quit watering, and that will result in some stabilization in the water table level. So this most recent event, I we're still tracking it, but it doesn't look like it resulted in too much recharge to the aquifer. Nonetheless, we've seen it kind of stabilize. We're not declining nearly as rapidly as we could be for this time of the year.
Well, that's great. Well, Roland, we really appreciate your spending the time with us. That's Roland Ruiz from the Edwards Aquifer Authority, and we've got 2 seconds for you to give us your website or how we can get more information about your organization.
You can come to edwardsaquifer.org, and we certainly welcome the visits.
Okay, well, thanks. And same thing for Chris. Chris in the studio with us is Chris Maxwell Gaines, and he's been telling us about his innovative water solutions. And we've already talked about how somebody gets started, but again, how would they contact you or find your website or get general information maybe even on rainwater collection?
The easiest is just watercache.com, our website, and it's C-A-C-H-E how you spell cache, and water storage is a play off of that. There's lots of resources out there on the online, but I do find that some of it's very fluff. There's some stuff out there, but definitely we try to tailor our website to provide a lot of educational resources for people.
And, of course, the City of Austin is always a good resource.
Correct.
So the website is water, www.water,
C-A-C-H-E.com.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, great. Thanks for staying with us, everybody, and thanks for coming by, Chris.
You have been listening to Shades of Green Energy, recorded live at KOOP 91.7 in Austin, Texas.